Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Jason Alder from AB Motorsports, and you're listening to the Thursday Night Thunder on the Speedway Digest Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the February 26th edition of Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder. I'm your host, Adam Jason Sinclair, and on tonight's program, Michael Mullally and myself will be talking about how not to mow your lawn, as well as reviewing the action from this past weekend in the exciting world of NASCAR. For those of you who follow me on Twitter as well as on Facebook, both through my personal page as well as through Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder, are undoubtedly aware that I spent this past weekend at the Daytona International Speedway. I was fortunate enough to be invited there by the people of Cone and Wolf, who are they're a PR team. They do work for numerous sponsors. This past weekend, they were working for Speedstick and the Front Row Motorsports team of Cole Witt. It was actually quite an enjoyable weekend. Most of the events took place. They started on Thursday during the duel races. I was unfortunately not able to attend the duels. They also had activity on Friday. I arrived there on Saturday morning, roughly 9 o'clock in the morning, picked up my credentials from the credential office on Dunn Avenue in Daytona Beach, which actually was rather painless. I was kind of surprised. It wasn't this last time I picked up credentials was for the season-ending event at the Homestead Miami Speedway, and it actually wasn't quite as well organized as I would hope. But the people in Daytona have 57 years of experience there, and I think that it all worked out rather well. After I picked up the hot passes, which I was fortunate enough to get, they were awesome. I traveled to the Speedway, wandered around through the midway there. They had a lot of displays, all of them related to the different sponsors, and there was all sorts of different things. They had a booth there for Homestead Miami Speedway that advertised the end of the race, the end of the season event, of course. They also had booths there from Ragu, where you're able to pick up a sample of spaghetti sauce. And right nearby there was a booth for Breyer's Ice Cream, where you're able to get a small ice cream sundae. And there's nothing better, as everyone knows, to have a ice cream sundae on a day when it is in the 50-degree range. Still, it was pretty good day. It all worked out in the end. My co-host, Michael Mullally, was really excited to have her biggest NASCAR crush, if you will, Joey Logano, win the race. And now Michael will join us.
Hey!
So you all happy that Logano won the event in Daytona?
I am. I was literally screaming at the TV the final lap.
I couldn't hear you at the speedway, but I bet if the cars wouldn't have been going by, I might have been able to make it out just a teeny bit, you know.
Oh, I'm sure.
As I've mentioned before, it was an interesting. It's a little bit of an interesting connection between myself and Joey Logano. When he first started his career, roughly 20 years ago now, my grandmother was involved with a man who toured around the country doing little shows. He was known as Speedo the Speedway Clown, and he had a bunch of contacts in NASCAR, and my grandmother was actually contacted by Joey Logano's mother, who was interested in trying to get more information about who to talk to get her son involved in the racing world, and that's pretty awesome. I'm pretty sure my grandmother was smiling down on Joey Logano this weekend.
Yeah, that's so sweet.
Mm-hmm. So how do you think what was your favorite part of the event?
Definitely Joey winning.
That was kind of cool. It was a great race. The three wide racing was pretty neat. There's some people who aren't very keen on that, but I think the three wide big pack is a lot better than when they had the two car breakaways in previous years. So.
Yeah, I was really happy to see. But I was really happy that Denny Hamlin didn't win, mostly because I think he's kind of a baby.
Yeah, well, I suppose he could be at times, but he's a great driver. You can't argue with that. And it seems like, as I, I actually had an opportunity to talk to Cole Whip, who is an awesome driver as well. He actually basically picked his finishing position, because in the interview he said that he was going to finish roughly 25th or so. That was the goal. And he ended up finishing in 22nd. So congratulations to Cole Whip and the Front Row Motorsports team. But he had some interesting insights about the race. He was happy that the start and park era, at least at Daytona, is pretty much over. There were only a few cars that ended up falling out, and none of them fell out because they parked the car. They all fell out due to accidents in the race. So that's always a good sign.
Yeah. How do you feel about Danica Patrick?
Honestly, I didn't pay much attention to Danica Patrick. I had a good picture of her because we were on pit road during the pre-race ceremonies, which if anyone out there in radio land ever has the experience to do that, I'd recommend it. It was amazing. But she did pretty well. She didn't have her best race, but it wasn't her worst race either. And I think the fact that she was basically on her fourth car of the weekend, she was doing the best she could with the equipment she had. And it was an older car. It was like 3 years old.
Yeah. It was kind of sad. I kind of felt like it was empty without the Busch brothers.
I agree. We had a good debate during lunch on Saturday. I was fortunate enough to meet a writer for Forbes magazine and Maxim magazine who had absolutely no idea what was going on in racing. None whatsoever. I mean, he had no clue. And so that's awesome he was there. But he had some insights into that. And as I said to the man there, I believe that they're sort of railroading Kurt Busch, because in this country, you are innocent until proven guilty. And there has been no finding of guilt as of yet. All they did is find reasonable cause to offer him an order of protection. And I think that he had no interest in being close to Patricia Driscoll anyway. And NASCAR should have left well enough alone. That's my opinion anyway.
Yeah, I read a lot of people saying that NASCAR is trying to keep people happy. But if they're trying to keep people happy, it seems like they're trying to keep, I don't know, almost like the wrong people happy.
I agree. I think that it's a personal issue, and it's they should let the courts run their course. And if he is guilty, then they can take care of it. Then they can suspend him and do whatever, because it's a bad thing. But he is not guilty until he's innocent until proven guilty, and he should still be racing in NASCAR this weekend. It was also unfortunate with Kyle Busch with the accident there, as it happens in Daytona pretty much every other year or whatever. If the cars can hit somewhere that's not protected, they will. They'll find a place, and it's not a good thing. So hopefully they're able to do some adjustments. NASCAR is proactive in safety. They're actually reactive in safety. They're not proactive, and that's kind of one of their issues. But that will have been something that I think our guest from last week, Ernie Irvin, would have a lot to say about, because his career was basically ended by the fact that there were no safer barriers in any of the tracks when he was racing. But hopefully Kyle Busch has a good recovery. I think it's interesting that they chose David Ragan, a Ford racing driver, to drive in a Toyota for at least 6 races. That's a little odd to me, but I'm pretty sure that was one of those things where they asked Kyle Busch if he wanted his car, and he said David Ragan, and they made it happen. And it should be a good thing for Ragan. It'd also be interesting to see Joe Nemechek, who we talked to his son a couple of weeks ago. So that should be interesting to see how he does in Front Row Motorsports, taking over Reagan's seat. He is definitely an experienced driver, I think is the kindest way to put it. He's not the youngest man in the garage. But as Cole Whip said in the interview that you can find on the Facebook page at facebook.com/SD Thursday Night Thunder, there's nothing nothing better than experience and seat time. And I think that Joe Nemechek definitely has both of those in buckets and could be good for the team.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of hate on Facebook towards the Busch brothers, but you can't take away that they are great drivers. And in my opinion, they kind of keep NASCAR exciting.
I agree. I think that they're the they're both from Las Vegas. They know what entertainment is, and they're both entertainers. They want to please the crowd. They want to put on a good show, and there are people who argue that NASCAR isn't a show, but those people are, in my opinion, those people are totally wrong. NASCAR is a show. If you look at the Daytona Rising project as an example, its design sort of like a massive football stadium where it's got all the entertainment things and the little cafes and everything else. So the France family understands that NASCAR is a big show. The Bush family understands that NASCAR is a big show, and hopefully NASCAR understands that NASCAR is a big show. It's definitely not as big of a show as say the Monster Jam, which both you and I have been to in the past few months. But it is entertainment, and entertainment first, I'd say, and automotive technology a really distant second. So as soon as they understand that, then it'll be a better series.
Yeah. How do you feel about the keep on the same nationwide? How do you feel about the Xfinity race?
I actually didn't see the beginning of the Xfinity race, which is okay because those races are pretty much like the Daytona 500 at times. It's just all going around in circles to the very end. But when I got there, was about one lap as I was on pit road. About one lap before the first caution, about five laps before the guy zoomed down pit road at nearly 200 miles an hour, and the Hellman's car ended up landing and doing the pirouette there on the front stretch. So that was interesting for people who enjoy crashes. That was definitely the race for you. It was a crash fest at the end, and the big part of it was that I thought was interesting was that NASCAR once again they proved that their rule book is written on with chalk on a chalkboard that everybody has an eraser for, because the last lap they had an accident and Keselowski was in the lead and they didn't throw a caution. Yet on Sunday, the last lap, they had an accident and they threw the caution. So if they're going to do that sort of thing, they have to be consistent. They either don't throw it or they throw it, and it makes it easier for everybody to understand what's going to happen. Our first guest this evening is Luke Rakowski. Luke races in the Capital District Lawnmower Racing Organization. In his rookie year, he ran eight races in the CDL MRO Big Block Stock Class, where he scored four wins and won the track championship.
For the 2015 season, the team is moving up two classes to the CDL MRO Modified Class. And Steve Hickey, who finished second in points to us in 2014 to drive in the big block class for us. Mr. Hickey is a former national champion and top 25 world-ranked BMX racer. They will be running 12 races this season with tractor shows at both the Gilderland and Cobleskill Tractor Supply stores. The team can be found on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Rakowski Family Motorsports and Twitter at Team RFM. A website is in the works for the 2015 season, as well as a line of team apparel.
They also race to raise awareness of childhood apraxia of speech. Info on that can be found at www.apraxia, that's APRAXIA-kids.org. They'll be taking part in the third annual Cobleskill New York Walk for Childhood Apraxia in the fall. This cause hits home for Luke, as his sister-in-law suffers from apraxia of speech. They've also been involved with the event since the very beginning and have had a good time there. Also this year, the team will be racing to raise awareness for colorectal cancer, and info on that can be found at fightcolorectalcancer.org. We now like to welcome Luke Rakowski to the program. Hello and welcome to the Thunderdome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Many people, including myself, would like to know a little more about the sport of lawnmower racing. What can you tell us about this unique form of motorsports?
Well, besides what a blast it is to go 30 miles an hour on generally a stock lawnmower, actually lawnmower racing has been around in both the UK and the US since the early 60s. There are currently two sanctioning bodies, the United States Lawnmower Racing Association, USLMRA, and the American Racing Mower Association, the ARMA. The USLMRA is the oldest sanctioning body, founded in 1992, and also has the Stabil National Series, which races across the country.
What's your average race weekend like?
Well, we race on Saturdays, Saturday afternoon, Saturday evenings. So typically Saturday morning is just involved with final checks on the machines, just making sure there's nothing loose, making sure we did our weekly prep and clean and tear down and put back together, make sure we got all our tools, fuel, everything, and then head to the track and hope we have a good race.
What form of oil racing do you feel is most similar to lawnmower racing?
I think local dirt track is most similar, as in the classes are similar. You'll have a stock where your street stock class. You'll have your super stock tractor, which would be equivalent to your pro stock dirt car. And then you have your modified single cylinder in the tractor, and you'll have your super mod V-twin, which you can compare to the big block and small block cars.
I know you've been active with the sponsor drivers thing on Twitter. How's your sponsorship hunt going?
It's going really well. We just currently worked out a deal with Bad Mixie's Good Deal Outlet. You can find them on eBay and on Twitter. And it's we've had a good relationship with the sponsor drivers and good conversations. And it was really good to work out a deal with Bad Mixies. We have a lot of the same goals and ideas as far as racing goes. It's been a good exposure for us.
What steps do you take to get ready for a typical race?
Well, we get to the track. At the track, it's all about like any other form of dirt track. It's you read the track and tires on a lawnmower. There's no suspension allowed on the lawnmowers. So tire pressure is critical, even as far down as the stock type classes, all the way up to the big modifieds. Tire pressure is critical, and so you need to really read the track. Make sure your pulley combination or gearing is correct, and just have a go at it.
What are your hopes for the 2015 season?
Well, we had a really good rookie year in 2014. It exceeded our expectations going in. We didn't really know what to expect, having not done this before. So our hopes are to build on that success and just keep learning. We learned a lot through last year, and obviously we're expanding our operations for this year with running the second tractor and adding a driver, and we just hope to have a really good, successful year and hopefully bring home two championships.
And now I'd like to turn the floor over to Michael Mullally, who has a couple of questions for you.
All right.
How did you get started in lawnmower racing?
Well, that's a good question. I enjoy motorsports, especially local dirt track, and I've always been a fan of and involved at some level. And right around the corner from my house, there was the track where they raced the mowers at, and I hadn't been down there in a while. And then I ended up with a tractor with a blown motor, and I kind of looked around and got the rules and was like, well, hey, why don't we give this a shot? This coming season, and that was in the spring of 2014, the early spring, probably like January. It's not really spring, and that's how that came about. It was just ended up with a tractor that needed a motor and all it did, and a little bit of luck too.
What are some of the different ways you can modify a racing lawnmower?
That's a very good question. It depends on the class, really. At our organization, there's five classes. We'll start out with the class we ran last year, which is the big block stock. It's a stock machine. You're limited to a certain number of RPM, 3,800 RPM. You can modify, you can swap out the transaxle, the transmission, as long as it's of lawnmower origin. So that for that class, that's pretty much all the modifications you can do. Other stuff is just for safety, bumpers, Nerf bars, kill switch tether. The class that I'm currently going to be driving in for this year is, as I say, this tractor is built to race, whereas the big block stock class tractor has been modified to race. This tractor sits an inch off the ground, uses a go-kart rear axle and bearings and bearing cassettes, fully adjustable front end, runs billet cam, billet rod, turns about 6,200 RPMs. It's not governed, and you can pour it and polish the head and shave, runs roller rockers. It's a fully built race engine.
Where do you find the parts and stuff to do those modifications to a racing lawnmower?
There are a few different places you can go. The big community is www.heymow.com, and that's the hub of, I would say, the lawnmower racing universe. And from there, you can find all the information on how to build, the different places you can get parts, what people have tried in the past, and what they've what has worked and what hasn't. But that would be generally the main area to go to start with, and that's where I started with, and that's where I found all my the places where I get all my parts.
Have you ever thought about racing like a car?
I have thought about it. I would love to race a car. My hope and eventual goal would be to race up here in the upstate New York area. We are blessed with four local dirt tracks all within about an hour of me. And I would love to race a big car in the 602 Sportsman crate class. But for now, family and kids and finances as it is, lawnmower racing is a way to enjoy racing in different levels in the sport at a very cost-effective basis compared to a car. So, yes, I have thought about racing a car. It is a dream of mine, but reality is such where I'm where I'm at, and I'm really loving it and looking forward to the upcoming year.
How does, lawnmower racing work? Is there, qualifying and stuff?
That's a very good question. In our organization, we, during our driver's meeting, we draw for heats. And you, there's two heats, and you draw for your first heat, and then invert the finishing order, so first would start last for the second heat. And then the winner of the first heat would draw for a starting position for the feature, and the winner of the second heat would draw next, and so on and so forth. And if you happen to win both heats, then you just draw first anyway. So there's draw for heats, two heats, redraw for the feature, and then have a go.
What is your best finish so far?
Well, first, we ended up winning four out of our eight races last year in our class. And actually, we were ahead in points at the end of our seven races, so much we didn't need to race our final race in our class. So we did a little bit of modifications to our tractor and moved up a class just for the fun of it, and that was fun. We didn't compete mostly because of the chassis limitations. Our chassis wasn't up to it, but we've had some feature wins and quite a bit of heat wins, and we ended up with a track championship last year. So we're really hoping to build on that for this year.
does the series, I guess, that you race in, is that like a touring series?
No, it's local. We do have two tracks within a half hour of each other that we race at. So it's not a touring per se, as in it's not out of state or around, you know, many different locations in the state, but there are two different tracks that we race at locally.
I was curious if there's any professional racers that you know of who've gotten their start in lawnmower racing.
That is a good question. I do not know the answer to that. But I would like to know that myself. I don't know of any, you know, that jumped to mind. So that is a good question. It'd be some good info to find out.
So I know that in Western Pennsylvania, where some of the best IndyCar drivers in the country have come from, lawnmower racing is fairly popular there as well.
Yes, if you were to go out in Pennsylvania, even a little more in the southern part of New York, down that way, it's pretty popular, and they race every weekend for quite a few weekends out of the summer. We're currently expanding our schedule, so I'm hoping we can get some more races up here. But you know, 12 races this season is pretty good.
We now have time for a few questions for our guests. If you'd like to call in, please do now at 215-383-3681. 215-383-3681. I know you mentioned you would be interested in eventually going into a local dirt track of some kind. What's your ultimate goal in motorsports?
My ultimate goal in motorsports, I would like to tour in some aspect in dirt tracking. I have my passion really lies in dirt tracking and local dirt tracks. And I think my goal, I want to race late models. Hey, I want to race sprint cars. I would eventually like to tour in some sort of dirt track format.
Who's your favorite driver now in the dirt track series?
Brett Hearn.
That's cool. And what did you think about the, we talked a little bit about the Daytona 500, we're going to talk a little bit more in a few minutes. What did you think of the race this past weekend?
I have to admit, I didn't watch it. I did hear about the controversy, though, with the yellow flag, and I'm not sure why that there can't be some sort of solid written guideline that everyone knows about and can be sorted out.
Yeah, I agree. I think that when they had the thing on I watched the broadcast actually this afternoon, even though I wasn't at the track this weekend, just to see what I might have missed. And it was kind of interesting that the Fox commentators brought on they basically listed the rule where the next flag ends the race after the green-white checker, and they totally forgot about that rule on Saturday.
I can't, in any form of racing or even being involved in racing myself, see a race ending under anything than a checker flag at race speed. So I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. Well, NASCAR's had the issues in the past where they've had the green-white checker thing was all new a few years, like 10 years ago. And it's definitely had some, its detractors and its supporters. Personally, I think that they had a few too many red flags, both on Saturday and on Sunday, and that really broke up the pattern of the race, and I think it kind of threw some of the drivers off a little bit.
Well, that could be any time a race is stopped and you're in a rhythm, you're in a momentum, and you got to sit there, and it can throw you off for sure.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the show and wish you lots of luck this season. Hope your team does very well.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Once again, we'd like to thank Luke Rakowski for taking the time out of his busy schedule to talk with us this evening and wish him luck in the world of high-speed lawn maintenance. We've got a little while to left of the program this evening. So if any of you would like to call in to have your air your opinions about the Daytona 500, the lines are now open. Phone number 215-383-3681. Who do you think is going to win this weekend in Atlanta?
This weekend, I'm thinking either Jimmy Johnson or Dale Earnhardt Jr.
I actually think that it'll be a Jeff Gordon weekend because he's done really well in Atlanta in the past, and I don't know how well he does in the cold though, because it's going to be really, really chilly there for both Saturday and Sunday. It was really chilly there today. They're lucky it wasn't snowing, but it was a little cold there for to be doing a race, I think. And I think that they've got some issues with their schedule they have to address, especially after the really cold winter we had this year.
Yeah, it's got to be hard to keep warm going 200 miles an hour.
I think that's kind of what threw off some of the people's rhythm. We were just talking about that briefly with Luke Rakowski. Another thing that threw off people's rhythm is the fact that the track temperature on Sunday at the Daytona 500 was 50 degrees warmer than it was for the qualifying duels on Thursday. And that's a huge difference. It was actually quite amazing because when I got up there on Friday night, I left here, it was about 70 degrees. So it wasn't too bad. Get up 2 hours up the road, a little less than 200 miles up the road, and it's 44 degrees with a heck of a wind. So it was a little bit chilly, and I understand why there weren't a lot of people at the truck race on Friday night. I wouldn't want to be outside in 40-degree weather with a wind blowing. I've done that a few times at Daytona in the past, and it's really not much fun.
No, especially when, you know, you can watch it from your couch and be warm.
I was surprised a little bit, however, that the other people from the Conan Wolf trip didn't go out to the racetrack. I think that you've got the fancy hot passes, use them. Apparently there was only one person of the group of, I believe there were five people aside from myself. There was only one of them that was interested in going to the race on Friday, and because the hotel was like 3 miles from the track, and he definitely wasn't from around there. I think he's from Virginia. He's actually the guy that owns SpeedwayDigest.com. He wasn't able to go to the track, and I think he watched it on TV and all that, but being at the track is better. And the standing room seats that we had, basically the hot pass things, at least you're wandering around. It's not as bad as sitting there in the cold.
Yeah, that's true.
It was definitely an interesting experience getting to see it from that side of the wall, basically. I'd actually hadn't hot passes at one time late 90s, maybe like 96, and that was at Homestead. That's when I got to meet Ernie Irvin, who I mentioned last week briefly. But that was a long time ago. Things have changed a lot in NASCAR since 1996.
Yeah, the design has really changed a lot. I kind of like, like the older cars, I guess. They weren't as high-tech, and I think it was more equal racing, I guess. Probably not the word I'm looking for, but even racing, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because when you look at that's one of the things I was able to notice, because I'd been at the Hendrick Motorsports shop in Concord in November, and looking at all their equipment there, and then looking at the equipment that their Front Row Motorsports has, it's just night and day. It's insane, because Hendrick, they use all new parts all the time. They always have new wheels on the cars. They always have the best of everything, the high technology, the unfair advantage, as Roger Penske's put it, the best of the best. And the more money you spend, it's all a vicious circle. The more money you spend, the better you are and the worse the other people are. But Front Row Motorsports, they have a rather, I suppose I'd call them the I called them the top of the bottom, because they have a decent budget, but they're not nowhere near Hendrick or Gibbs or Penske. And you can actually see that if you watch the race, because the highly funded teams went to the front and they stayed in the front. The little bit worse funded teams were in the middle and they stayed in the middle. And the teams that were basically just like the thing from the Days of Thunder quote, where they basically gave them enough money to put their name on the car, those were the people who were running around the back the whole race. And it's kind of interesting to see that. But I think that the rule book says, as they said before, that all the cars are supposed to be equal. And if you've got that much difference in technology and other things, the cars aren't equal. The drivers might be equal. Some of them are iffy. But no matter, a really good driver in halfway decent equipment isn't as good, in my opinion, as a halfway decent driver in the best equipment out there. And that doesn't really seem fair.
No.
And there's no good answer either. So it's all a matter of sponsorship. It's all a matter of money. The people who, the sponsors who give big lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of money expect really good results. And in most cases, they get it. So it's all a catch-22. It's not the, in my opinion, again, it's not the best way to run a racing series. There isn't an easy answer, but they have to do something to try and address the economic inequality of the sport. And I think that the way they could do that is by splitting the TV money a little bit better, maybe increasing some of the prize money for the different teams. And even you can do what IndyCar does, which is one of those heaven forbid type things, where IndyCar basically finances certain, they give every team a basic budget, if you will. They give them a little bit of money to help out, so everybody's pretty much even. And that's not really the answer either, but I think that would probably make it a little bit more, make the competition a little bit more even in NASCAR.
Yeah, and I don't know, in my opinion, I think a lot of people would, I don't want to say watch, because I know a lot of people watch NASCAR, but I think it would make, I don't know, I guess like fans more into it, I guess,
mm-hmm.
if the racing was more, you know, equal.
Mm-hmm. I think it was actually pretty cool this year at Daytona. They had it was according to what Dale Earnhardt Jr. said, it was one of the first years that they had a sellout crowd there, and that's pretty awesome. So they're doing something right, but I think a lot of the people, especially if you look at what they're wearing, were there in sort of a way to say goodbye to Jeff Gordon in his last race. And that's that was kind of a sad thing, too. He was really emotional. You could see that on TV. You can even see it a little bit in the interview he gave MRN at the track. But it would have been cool to see Jeff Gordon win his last race at Daytona, but it just wasn't in the cards for him this year.
No. My dad, because he's a really big Jeff Gordon fan, so you can imagine how excited he was when Jeff Gordon led, like, almost the entire race, and then, mm-hmm. you know, he doesn't win because Joey does. But
I think that was interesting. Joey Logano, he's had quite the life in racing, and I've talked to other people, Jason Alder, for example, who did the promo for me this evening, who got started really early because his father wants him to be the best future of motorsports, and from talking with Jason Alder a couple times, I'm pretty sure he will be, but Logano did the same sort of thing where he got started really early in life, and his family actually moved from Connecticut to North Carolina. But even that goes to the budget thing a little bit too, because his family was able to afford to give up everything they had and move to North Carolina when the kid's like 5 years old, build an ice rink for his sister. And there's a lot of drivers out there, several of them I've had in this program, probably including our last guest, Mr. Rakowski there, who wish that they had that sort of financial backing. I'm sure you do too in your racing deal. If you had the large amount of financial investment that Joey Logano had, it changes the way that the whole their whole career goes.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I never thought of it like that.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting when you look at when you look around the garage there, you can see the different people, the different teams. Even Cole Witt, for example, Cole Witt's father is the same sort of way, where he and his wife have done everything they could to make sure that Cole has the best equipment, the best deal, and everything else. And that's great, but Cole got a little bit later start. And I don't know what the age is to get started in NASCAR to be successful. Cole Witt started when he was 12 years old. Joey Logano, according to the reports I've seen, started when he was like 5. There's other drivers who start when they're older. And it seems that the people have said that the drivers mature quicker nowadays. But I think it's basically the same maturity level it's always been. They just get a really early start as opposed to the guys who get started racing when they get out of the Army after World War II. Instead of that, they get started when they are 2. And it just changes everything. That's a good thing. It's definitely a changeover in the sport. The drivers are getting younger. And I was surprised the fan base seems to be getting a little bit younger, at least for the Daytona 500. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. All in all, I guess the Daytona 500 wasn't too bad.
It wasn't. It was actually a really good race. I'm impressed. It was. I'd like to thank the people of Conan Wolf, Muhammad D, and David Schwartz for inviting me to come along with them this past weekend. That was awesome. I can't wait to work with them again in the future. I know they mentioned briefly that they're working on some sort of deal for the All-Star race in Charlotte, and maybe for the 600, and that would be intense. Charlotte has its own set of issues, but seeing the racetrack, and seeing the race there, the longest race of the year would be amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy though to think that NASCAR just started like literally one race, and there's already all this controversy.
Well, I think that's a good thing for NASCAR, though. It's one of those things where there's no publicity that's bad publicity, because people get thinking about it, they get talking about it, and people who might not have tuned in at all for the race in Atlanta are now thinking about watching it just because of the fact that Kyle Busch broke his foot and his leg and won't be in the car, that David Reagan's moved into Kyle Busch's car. That Joe Nemechek is getting a slightly better equipment than anything Nemco Motorsports could offer him. And it'll be interesting to see how the season goes. It is a really long season. It started this past weekend, doesn't get over until early November. But should be something interesting to see anyway.
Yeah. Did you catch the last NHRA race?
I actually did not. No, I got home at the end of the – on Saturday I was at the track, and then we went out to a later dinner. On Sunday I was at the track, and I ended up wandering around the Daytona Beach Kmart for a little while because it's a little bit further away, and I was able to get picked up there. And then we had a later dinner on Sunday as well. So I didn't see any of the NHRA event at all. What'd I miss? How did Sean Langdon do?
I'm going to be honest. I didn't watch any of it.
Well, that's kind of an issue, too, that the NHRA has a problem with the fact that their ratings aren't quite as high as they should be. And part of it's the deal with the fact that they break up the racing so much and they have such an odd schedule. So, better luck next time.
Yeah. Honestly, watching it on TV, it doesn't even really, I mean, like, okay, I still try and catch it whenever I can, but there's nothing like watching it in person.
True. That's the same deal with the Daytona 500. It's all, it's all the experience. It's all the smells and the sights. I mentioned briefly to pretty much the entire group that I was hanging out with that it's amazing how much more the V8 engines of the Cup cars rattle the ground as opposed to the IMSA cars that I saw there in January. It's just intense.
Yeah, I wonder.
Well, it looks like Michael Mullally has dropped off the program for a few moments. Hopefully she'll be back. We got like 15 minutes left of the program this evening. Next week, our guest is going to be Shane Lewis, of the who does a lot of sports car racing, both in IMSA as well as in the Trans Am series. And that should be interesting to hear his perspective. We also have Garrick Merchant, who we've had on the... not Garrick Merchant. We also have a couple other drivers lined up for the week. We have the head of the Racing to Cure charity, who's scheduled to be on next week as well. So it should be a pretty good show. You're back.
I am. I think my face hung up.
You've got technological difficulties again. That's what it is.
It seems like I always have those.
Well, it should be interesting to talk to Shane Lewis anyway. He's going to be, this is his first year competing in the full season of the Trans Am series for Robinson Racing. Trans Am is definitely a series that's had its ups and downs. Hopefully this is an up year. I'm currently planning on going down to the Trans Am race at Homestead Miami Speedway in April. I haven't purchased tickets as of yet, but I'm crossing my fingers that the free ticket people call me again. If not, I'm probably going to go down there anyway. It should be a really cool race. And I used to like Trans Am racing back in the 90s when people like Scott Pruitt and Tommy Kendall were big in it, and Roush Racing and all that. So it should be pretty neat.
Yeah. What is Trans Am racing?
Do you follow the Pirelli World Challenge at all?
I try to.
It's basically the same sort of thing. They're slightly modified, almost like stock cars. They call them pony cars with the Mustangs and the Chargers and that sort of thing. Challengers. So.
Oh, that's actually pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. I talked to one of the drivers of it, and interviewed her during my time with Examiner.com. I might repost that to the page at Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder on Facebook. But definitely has its good parts. They have large fields, and it should be pretty cool. They don't have as big of a field as the Pirelli World Challenge does. The Pirelli World Challenge, when they go into the Circuit of the Americas, I believe it might be this weekend, has 100 entries for the event. Pretty big race. And they don't send anybody home. All they do is they split the classes off because they have the GT Touring and they have the GT Sport and that sort of thing. So they just have extra races. It'll be the same in Tampa for the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg at the end of March for a fleet. I think it's actually 1 month from tomorrow. That race is. So. Should be good.
Yeah, sounds definitely interesting.
Racing season is definitely underway in Florida and throughout the rest of the country now. It just matters that hopefully the weather cooperates, because I don't think it will cooperate in Atlanta for NASCAR this weekend.
No. Where the beauty of watching it on television comes in.
Exactly. Where it's not in the 20s wandering around in the city where if it's 50 degrees, it's cold. So.
Yeah. Have you guys gotten any?
I know on your personal Facebook page, you're working on a car show. Do you want to mention that briefly?
Yeah. So on my Facebook page, I should start with this. On February 20th, there was a car meet that ended pretty badly. One of the kids that was meeting up for the meet, he ended up losing control of his car, and two of the people out of three ended up dying. Mm. And so this car show that we're trying to put on is going to be for the kids, for those kids that died and for the one that survived. But it's going to be March 14th at 12 p.m. All cars are welcome. It is in Moses Lake, Washington, so that's kind of, you know. But for anyone that's listening that maybe wants to take a road trip or something, like I said, all cars are welcome. We're trying to get as many cars there as possible. Trophies will be handed out, as well as all donations will be given to the families. There will be booths and music and stuff like that. And like you said, you can find the event on my Facebook page. For whoever's listening and doesn't know, you know, my Facebook page, it's Michael Mullally, MYKKALMULLELEY. And yeah, go check it out and see if that's something you guys would be interested in. It's for a good cause. So that should be pretty great. I'm excited. Hopefully those families get all the help they need.
Hopefully they do. I know in the past we've actually had people like Vanilla Ice who've listened to the program here. They let me know, so never know. Maybe if Vanilla Ice is listening, he can bring his Cadillac Mafia out to Moses Lake, Washington, and help support the good cause.
They also have GoFundMe pages set up.
Okay.
So for anyone listening that wants to donate, you can go to www.gofundme.com. The first boy's name is Austin Fry. That's spelled AustonFrye. He's from Heartline, Washington. Their goal is $7,000, and they're currently at $5,030. So they could still use a little extra help. And the second one is Pedro Huitron, PedroHuitron, and he's from Moses Lake, Washington. Their goal is $7,002, but he's currently at $8,438. But you know, any bit helps. But you can also find the GoFundMe pages on my Twitter. I've shared them. I'll probably share them again because I tend to tweet and retweet people's stuff a lot, so I can share those again. But my Twitter handle is @Michael61, and yeah, so go to GoFundMe and my Twitter, and let's just help these families.
I hope you have a really good turnout, and I hope that it's a successful event. It's definitely good. Sounds like it's a really good cause.
Yeah, maybe you should take a road trip.
Not this week, I don't think, no. Not in March. A little too cold up there in March. It's the middle of summer.
Gosh.
You never know.
Okay, it is a little cold in March.
Be sure to check out past episodes of Thursday Night Thunder, as well as the other shows on the Speedway Digest Radio Network at SpeedwayDigestRadioNetwork.com. You can also check out this show on Facebook by searching for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar. As I mentioned, you can find the full interview that I did with Cole Witt. I'm going to repost that on there in a few moments. So it's a really in-depth interview. It gives you an idea of what the future of NASCAR might be. I also invite you to read the articles covering all aspects of motorsports at SpeedwayDigest.com. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to seeing you next week in the Thunderdome.